Welcome back to the show, where as day turns to night, we cover all topics strange and unknown. I'm host, over there's DK. We have a special guest joining us today, Bricky. You are listening to the Unidentified Signal on 99.9 FM. Today's an interesting one, my friends. Shy approached me with this topic, slid it across my desk, and I bring to you the Dyatlov Pass.
Oh, no!
Shy mentioned to me that I would enjoy today's topic, and I actually, I do know a little bit about this one. I like it. It's quite fascinating.
I have heard of it. This is gonna be good. This is gonna be really, really good.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. I had a lot of fun doing the research on this one, and it's a treat for the listeners today. So I've written, of course, as par for the course, I've written a story, how I like to explain all these things.
Okay. Before we get into that, do we want to let our in-studio guest do a little intro? I mean, most people probably know him, but it's common courtesy and whatever.
Let's hear it.
Hey, I mean, it's a pleasure to be on the show with y'all. Thank you very much for inviting me. To all of the listeners in the audience, I'd like to say hi. I'm Bricky. I do videos on the internet far away from the lovely studio audience we have here.
And in Augury Point, New Mexico.
Yeah, it's a bit of a hop, skip, and a jump for me, but I was taking a little bit of trip cross country, and what better place to stop by?
Well, you know. I can think of a few better places. But, you know,
what a decent place to stop by.
It's we don't have a fancy studio, but it's home. You know,
it is home.
There's a few cracks in the wall, but you know, nothing. A few cups of coffee and a couple shots won't fix.
What time is it canonically right now?
About 11 p.m.
Yeah.
Well, if we're gonna be a real broadcast, we need a combo of whiskey inside the coffee late into the night.
Yeah, we'll make this coffee Irish, right? A little shot of the old Jameson.
You know what? This will be a fun one.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I'm really, really looking, because I covered the American version of this a while back. I don't know if you remember that, Bricky. It was now I can't remember what the title of it was. We did it on Detective Ridiculous. It was the, there were eight of them.
In the Yuma County, California.
Yes. County eight.
Yes.
Yeah. That's basically the American version.
Except replace it's, it with there's a bit of a mental yeah. health thing with that one.
Yeah,
it's let me correct you real quick before we get too deep into the weeds. Yuba County 5.
Oh, I did the episode and everything, and
it was a bit ago.
It was a while ago. That was like the second episode of Detective Ridiculous. The second or third one. So,
I mean, there's a big difference between that having some mental health in play, whereas in this one, I feel like we're going to get a little more radioactive.
to say the least, he's actually not too far off base there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, exactly.
I know this story from a much more layman's perspective, so I'm excited to hear what Slap has for us.
I have brought you the story. I have brought you the science. I even dug up a few of the autopsy reports. There's a little bit of legwork I've done here.
Genuinely thought you were about to say, you even dug up a couple bodies.
I did.
Oh,
we can't say that on the radio, though.
Yeah, definitely. I hope that's not.
For the government listening, I did not actually dig up a body, as far as you know.
It was a joke, completely fictional, never happened. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. All right, Slap, tell us about
you
the
got it
Dilatov pass, right?
Dyatlov pass.
Dyatlov, sorry, I can barely speak English.
Isn't the one of the main people at the Chernobyl incident named Comrade Dyatlov? I think I remember a name like that when I watched the Chernobyl miniseries.
Oh man, that miniseries was crazy.
Anatoly.
Okay, I must say it could just be a common name. Yeah.
It is.
I'm assuming the pass is named after. Anyway, I'm sorry. We're getting off topic. Please.
No, you're fine. So, without further ado, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to our deep dive into one of the most perplexing mysteries of the 20th century, the Dyatlov Pass incident. In this, we'll explore the eerie events that unfolded on the slopes of the Ural Mountains, the tragic fate of 9 hikers, and the plethora of theories that attempt to explain the unexplainable. So let's set the stage. In the winter of 1959, a group of experienced hikers led by one Igor Dyatlov embarked on a challenging expedition in the northern Ural Mountains of the Soviet Union. Their destination, the Otorten Mountain. This trek was meant to be a test of their skills, a journey into the wilderness to prove their mettle. So, to make a long story short, they just wanted to see if they could do it.
Okay. So the nothing team, nothing spooky. They didn't like, it wasn't like, oh, they just vanished while they were in like a car or something. They were actively going on this hike and then just poof.
Yeah, no, it was a brainchild idea. All of them just decided, let's see if we can do it. Let's go hike this mountain. It's the late 50s at this point, so a lot of the hiking scene was still relatively being tested and discovered.
If I'm unmistaken, these individuals were also pretty experienced hikers, either part of a club or like a hiking group of some kind.
Yeah. You know, you're on the money. They were very well-knit, very close friends, had been hiking together on and off for a very long time, as we're led to believe. And this should have been just a routine, you know, challenge for them. Like, there was, by all intents and purposes, this should not have failed.
Oh, so the Dyatlov Pass isn't like a treacherous hike. It's just the terrain is fairly normal, maybe a little foresty, maybe a little snowy. It's not like a known to be treacherous, like highly skilled hike.
The hike itself is arguably treacherous, but the name of the incident is based off of the group's leader, Igor Dyatlov.
I was about to say, I saw his name on like this little pamphlet Shai gives us of all these pictures and stuff. And I was like, is it, wow, what a coincidence that Dyatlov disappeared on the Dyatlov Pass.
Yeah. So as our producer just slid across the desk here, we have 10 individuals and you'll notice I've only mentioned 9 and we'll get into that.
I must say, Semyon Zoltaryov has quite the mustache.
I was about to make a point on that, but I didn't think it would be, I wasn't sure if I would derail us that way. Proud that we're thinking the same thing. No, I must admit there is the 10th individual does have an asterisk by their name, so
there is
some intrigue there.
Don't love that.
Mm-hmm. So the team consisted of 9 individuals, all with unique backgrounds and aspirations. Igor Dyatlov, the leader, was a radio engineering student. Zinaida Kolmogorova, Rustem Slobodin, Ludmila Dumanina, Yuri Krivonishenko, I'm butchering these names. I'm just going to say first names. Yuri Durashenko, Alexander Kolvatov, Yuri Yudin, who you saw the asterisks there, and Nikolai Thibault-Brignoli, made up of the rest of the group. A mix of students and professionals bound by their love for adventure.
Okay.
So on January 23rd, 1959, and for a while, everything seemed routine. However, on February 1st, when the group failed to make their scheduled communication, concerns started to mount. A rescue team was dispatched, and what they found would baffle investigators for decades. Now, I don't know how much you know about these long form hikes typically, but there's usually a check-in just to make sure, hey, we're not dead.
Yeah.
They missed it. Oh, they missed it by quite a bit.
Oh.
So,
how long are we talking about, like, they missed it? Like, they didn't call in for, like, 3 days, and then they were like, rut-row.
Well, so, this took place, you said, in the 50s, correct?
Yeah, late 50s, 1959.
So, calling in, I assume, is not, is it really a feasible thing?
Realistically, yeah, but this is why Igor, the group's leader, was a radio engineering student. So, they had equipment to at least, you know, ping back to say, with a radio check-in, usually short-form radio at this time, to say we're still good. Specifically, if we're paying attention to the timeline here, it's the late 50s, and what was happening in Russia in the 50s and 60s?
Nothing good.
The Cold War.
The Cold War, mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, like, you could say it was happening in Russia, but in a sense, wasn't. I mean, it was more just like the general... Because the Cold War lasted for, what, 40 years?
Roughly, yeah. We're just labeling an era.
There.
Cold War era, yep.
Yeah. So, these guys disappeared. And that was the last they heard of them, period.
Vanished off the face of the earth. Nothing left.
Off the face of the earth. Well, there was something left, I'll tell you that.
Okay.
But since they missed their check-in on the 1st of February, somewhat 7 to 10 days later, that was it. People began to get concerned. Now, I mentioned 9 hikers. Yuri Yudin, the one with the asterisk next to his name, had begun feeling unwell and decided he wouldn't go on this hike with his friends.
Oh, we got a final destination situation.
So at the last moment, he genuinely decided he was going to sit this one out. And all 9 of his friends went off, never to be seen again.
Yeesh.
Last seen alive, rather. We'll put it that way.
Is Yuri still alive today? I see Shai has slid over a nice little photo of what I assume to be him in his older years, but...
So Yuri passed away. I think I remember 2013, something along those lines.
Okay, so
1959 to 2000. And, yeah, that's
relatively. Well, he was.
He had a nice long life.
Yeah, he seems like he grew up to be quite older. So
yeah,
interesting.
Yeah, April 27, 2013, at the age of 75.
Oh, okay. Yeah, not bad. Yeah.
Good thing you didn't go on that hike.
Yeah, good thing.
I must admit, death took its sweet old time. Final destination normally has it a little quicker.
Yeah, final destination happens a little quicker. But, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So, obviously we needed to find out what happened. So, who but Yuri to lead... the rescue team. Mm. So he's feeling a little bit better and decides, I'm going to go find my friends. The rescue team, led by Yuri, discovered the group's abandoned campsite on Kolat Sakal, or Dead Mountain. The tent, torn from the inside, raised immediate questions. All of the hikers' belongings, including their warm clothing and boots, were all left behind, and it appeared as though they all just left in a panic. They just tore out from the inside of the tent and took off.
Whoa.
That is...
That's kind of creepy.
That is the particular part of this whole thing that I find the most interesting is that the cut came from inside the tent.
Ooh.
Yeah. And that's a lot of theories surrounding that.
Yeah, like, well, so like, the warm clothes being left behind, I think I can understand, because isn't it like, when you start to succumb to hypothermia, like, you sort of instinctively, like, strip your clothes in a weird manner, and you like leave them behind before it sets in or something?
Actually, yeah, you're not far off at all. So hypothermia, for those who care for the science, is typically a condition where the body's internal temperature drops alarmingly fast. And your nerves respond to this almost like heat. So instead of bundling up to preserve your warmth, you start taking clothes off. It takes a mental toll on the person being affected, so much so that they're liable to walk out into a blizzard in their skippies.
Yeah, so it's not totally uncommon that it's like, oh, why'd they leave all their warm clothes behind? It's like, well, hypothermia probably set in, and that kind of happens, but they're also in a warm tent, so...
Exactly. The strangeness of it comes from that tent. It's warm in there. It's designed to shelter them from the sub-zero temperatures of the mountain and where they are. So for them to cut out from within and then leave, because they must have been of sound mind, at least while they were inside, so no one thought to... you know, gather their warm clothing before they head out. But it must have been, presumably, one hell of a thing to happen that they just said, never mind, I'm leaving without it.
Yeah, F it, I'm cutting out of the tent because I got to get away. Must have been one hell of a thing.
It certainly speaks to declining mental faculties and I mean, because these were, because it's one of those things to always remember is these were experienced hikers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't do these things willingly.
Willy-nilly, yeah.
Yeah, they weren't amateurs by any stretch of the imagination. They knew what they were doing. But then for something like this to happen, obviously, what happened that caused them to just throw all of their training out the window and experience?
Yeah. So what else was found? Or I guess I'll just let you continue.
Yay. So, as the search continued, the bodies of the hikers were discovered under perplexing circumstances. Some were found with minimal clothing, despite the freezing temperatures. Others displayed signs of physical trauma, such as fractured skulls and chest injuries. And one hiker, Ludmila Dubinina, even had her tongue missing.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of theories surrounding that, and it ranges from the mundane to the downright supernatural. Like, some speculate on avalanches and military involvement, or even, as wild as it seems, a Yeti attack. Others point to infrasound, which is paradoxical undressing due to hypothermia or even extraterrestrial interference.
Okay. So it could be aliens, it could be the abominable snowman, it could be a Yeti, it could be military doing weird military things. The possibilities are seemingly endless for all manner of paranormal, otherworldly events.
Essentially, yeah. So let me tell you how these bodies were found. So let's paint the picture again, because in the snow. On February 1st, they missed the call.
I'm sorry. Continue. I'm looking all over to my left right now. I'm wondering about stabbing our co-host.
Hey, buddy, please.
I need to give you more material for the show.
Go ahead.
Hey, listeners, you ever seen a live murder?
Hey, heard. Would you like to? A live murder. You know, nobody's going to see it. They'll hear it.
Oh, we'll sell tickets to the studio. It'll be fine.
Turn off security camera.
CCTV doesn't work anyway.
There's
a reason
we have them in every corner of the room.
Oh, that's interesting. The two over there seem freshly installed. Was that for me?
No, it was because, you know, Shai's here, and I need as many cameras as I can, because you just never know with her.
I must say, the 9mm she has pointed at me is quite convincing.
Yeah.
Anyway, continue, Slap.
So, February 1st, they missed their comms. The search ensues, and all the way until February 26th, where the rescue team led by Yuri Yudin discovered the hikers' abandoned campsite in Kolosikal, also known as Dead Mountain, and the tent was torn from the inside. So from the 1st to the 26th is the time frame we're looking at. So this is now a full month since the hiker's presumed disappearance that things are being found.
Okay.
So the first set of two bodies, those of Yuri Krivonishenko and Yuri Doroshenko, were found near the remains of a makeshift campfire in the woods, almost a full mile away from the tent.
Huh.
So they cut out from the tent, and at least these two trucked a mile away.
Wow. And made a fire to try and survive.
Right. So the hikers were only partially clothed and show signs of exposure to harsh winter conditions. So it's presumed right off the bat that these two simply died of hypothermia.
Okay. So technically those two could have done something to the other people and then trucked it away to... Wow, that's weird.
Mm-hmm.
Or they escaped from whatever got the other people, and oh boy, that's weird that they... Mm.
Over the next few days, the remaining seven bodies, including that of Igor Dyatlov, were discovered in a line of about 300 meters between what most folks see specifically on the diagram here is the cedar tree and the tent.
Mm-hmm.
These bodies were found under several meters of snow and displayed more severe injuries such as fractured skulls and chest injuries.
Huh. So if they were under that much snow, they'd been there for a while.
Right.
What right. is... Did they show... Well, I guess, okay. You already answered my question. I believe, like, did they show any signs of lacerations and stuff? But I don't think you could tell at that point, because wouldn't the... Were they just bone at that point, or...
They're pretty well preserved for what it's worth, so much so that the autopsies were able to conclude, at least to some degree of accuracy, like a cause of death, which is why they were convinced that the first two, both Yuris, died of hypothermia. And it's presumed that these found with the fractured skull and chest, like injuries, internal injuries, presumably died from whatever it was that impacted them.
Huh. Well, yeah, I guess if you're in that cold and you're buried under that much snow, I mean, it's essentially like you're getting mummified. Like, you will be pretty, your body anyway, will be pretty well preserved. And they can probably, yeah, like you said, I mean, there's a list here of like all of the info from the autopsy, and it is quite
that's
white
Igor list. Alone. Yeah, that's just Igor. That's one person of that group of seven.
Wow. That's the dried blood on the lips, huh? Lower jaw to missing incisor, bruised knees.
So I mentioned it was obvious what I meant when I mentioned lacerations. Bear attack or something of that, mm-hmm. but
the wilderness got
wilderness
them, right?
stuff, whatever it is. I don't know if there are even bears in this area. It's quite cold. Not to say that bears don't live in, you know what I mean?
Polar bears, you know?
Well, I mean, polar bears are.
They exist.
And they are known to hunt humans.
Sure.
Which is quite something. Mm-hmm. That's the interesting part here is that with the exception of like you said, okay, you see abrasions on left cheek, abrasions of the left eyebrow on both cheeks. He had joints and bruises on his hands. It looks like he fist fought someone.
Yeah, it looks like he got into a fight with someone, like a person, not like a
right.
bear
yeah.
or something.
Oh, 100% agree.
Specifically, like, you see dried blood on his lips and his lower jaw had a missing incisor.
Yeah, like he got punched really hard.
It says that the tooth was lost long before the trip, possibly, but it looks like he got punched a lot in the face, yeah. I mean, the other option would be that he was stumbling due to the hypothermia and falling down and hitting rocks and pieces of
wood. Oh yeah, true.
There's also that
taking an awful tumble.
But number 13 specifically refers to common injuries in hand-to-hand fights. So just need to point that out.
Is the area known for like bears, wolves?
I'll actually get into that for you a little bit.
Okay, well, great. Yeah. I have the foresight, apparently.
I am well prepared, my friend.
Hell yeah, brother.
So the only other one to mention here, which wasn't outlined in that initial group of seven, was Ludmila Dubanina, who was found a little further away with her eyes missing and her tongue missing.
Oh, why? Oh, no, that's... Ugh.
Solid right. question.
That is right? odd things to be... Well, someone else had their tongue missing too, right?
Nope, just Ludmila.
Oh, okay.
Just one person. Someone else had their eyes missing, but the tongue missing was unique to Dubanina. That's usually when they talk about the injuries here, because the circumstances in which the bodies were found and like their peculiar locations, it's fueled various theories and speculations about, you know, what happened that night in the pass.
Wow. So they were just found in a row. Oh, well, God, that's, it's also a very strange way to find, like, that's a...
The two people on the top, embracing each other is particularly strange.
Well, it looks like maybe, if anything, they were just trying to keep warm and just body heat it, you know? But yeah, that's...
Oof. Yeah. One of the things that I didn't necessarily mention immediately, so I can talk about it now, was the fashion in which they left the tent. So they cut out from within the tent, but they might have left in a panic. But what baffles people like to this day is the calm, orderly fashion of the footsteps in the snow leading away from the tent.
Oh, that's true. I guess if you found the footprints, you could tell if they were like running, walking, and so the footprints were just kind of like, you know, very normal looking.
Yeah, it looks as though they calmly and collected walked away from the tent.
Oh, that's weird.
No running, no hassle, no kerfuffle, nothing. They left the tent and just proceeded in almost a straight line down from the tent to the cedar trees and then some.
Which naturally makes it seem like that they were led away from the tent by other individuals, perhaps.
By someone they knew or something. Yeah. Also, how did they find the footprints? Because by the time they found them, it had been a while. Wouldn't the snow cover those up?
So with the way that the weather and the wind and all of that works with where they were, they were underneath what's like a slab or a shelf. Like, experienced hikers will use snow walls to kind of hide their tents to kind of mitigate the wind and the cold, right?
Got you. And they were in one of those, so the tracks were preserved?
At least as far as they could tell. At least those, because they found the tent first. So the longer the search went on, some things did get buried. But when they found the tent initially, they were able to see at least so much as these footprints.
Okay.
So there's a million and one theories, and I've narrowed it down to seven that I like these seven. They're strange enough.
Okay.
So the first one is a Yeti or an abominable snowman. Right? Some theories suggest that the hikers encountered a Yeti or an abominable snowman, leading to a violent confrontation, and the idea is just simply fueled by the notion that the injuries sustained by the hikers were too severe to simply be caused by natural elements. But as Bricky pointed out before, some of those injuries could easily have been explained by either a fist fight or stumbling through the terrain, landing on rocks, and everything was uneven, so it's also fair to say that they could have just fallen and sustained these injuries.
Yep. And if I feel like if it was a Yeti, like I'm assuming like the Yeti was outside their tent or something and they had to cut their way out, like then that wouldn't explain the footprints being so calm. Because if I was being attacked by a Yeti, I would be running my ass as fast as I could away from said Yeti, not brisk, calm, easy walk through the snow.
Not to mention a Yeti would also most likely make its own footsteps and prints.
Oh. Good point. Yeah, a Yeti would make gigantic, nasty. Yeah, and everything would be way more hectic at the campsite.
Right. Which, for what it's worth, doesn't explain them leaving the tent, but it can potentially, where the theory kind of lays its credence is the injury sustained after. So there's still no concrete evidence or theories that suggest a true to form, why did they leave the tent? You know, that question still remains completely unanswered.
So it's like they left the tent, and then when they were out in the wilderness, they ran into a Yeti, and then
still no
reason why. Okay, so the Yeti wouldn't be the reason they left the tent, just how they got kind of all these crazy injuries.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. So Shai just slid across another piece of document from a publication for a transcript and a leaflet.
She's getting good at that, by the way.
Yeah, in recent years, there has been a heated debate about the existence of a Yeti. According to recent reports, Yeti lives in a northern Ural near Mount Otorten, where they exactly were. So if they're... Of course, this obviously lays more credence to their theories, but it's also why I like the theory. It's outlandish enough to be fun. But the idea that science, quote unquote, is confirming the potential existence of this thing that just so happens to live in an area where these hikers went missing. So it's just like, okay, they got beat by the Yeti and maybe they did get lost in the wilderness, but it still doesn't explain why they left the tent.
Yeah. Okay.
Another fun theory is military involvement.
As always.
Yeah, I love it. There are theories suggesting that the Soviet military was conducting secret tests or operations in the area, and the hikers accidentally stumbled upon classified activities. So to cover it up, the military allegedly took drastic measures, leading to the demise of the hikers.
I mean, the Soviet Union has never been the most subtle in things like this.
True. So. There's just something that's so, like... Like, normally I'm all for, government conspiracy, right? But, like, it's all so strange, because, like, if it was, like, the government came and offed them, again, why are they cutting out of the tent? And then, like, with just the crazy array of, like, injuries and the missing eyes and the missing tongue and the space between, like, there's the campfire and there are two bodies there and the other bodies are over there. Like, that doesn't seem like this is just a government hit job. And, I mean, I guess they could have set the bodies up like that to make it look like, ooh, the elements got them. But it's just, I don't know, that one doesn't... I don't know. It just seems all too, I don't want to say random, but it all just seems so weirdly weird that it just doesn't spark me as like, oh yeah, the government did it.
And I thought the same exact thing. Go ahead, Bricky.
I was thinking, I think that's one of the more intriguing parts of a lot of modern day and also back when conspiracy theorists is the farther you push it towards that unbelievable state, the more it reinforces the theory. Because if I was a government, especially, you know, in the '50s, this was the time of conspiracy.
True.
The more bizarre it is, the more you can push to the idea of, well, anything they could do to cover up government involvement, go back in the tent, slice from outside of it, arrange bodies in a weird way, cut out this person's tongue, beat this person with rocks, whatever you can to explain away the craziness, the more and the more that you add to that, more you can kind of say to yourself, well, it makes sense they would do whatever they possibly could and not get caught. But I agree. I don't consider it government either, but it is like when people get really into this concept, I think they push it more in that sense.
Yeah, it's all fuel to the fire. And why I liked it is it's really easy for me because of like having been military to put your mind like in the state of what would a young, potentially wild-minded person think in this situation. And if they were going to cover up, they would absolutely make it look like it was either fully natural or the Yeti did it. So it's kind of like two reinforces one in this respect. But why they left the tent is my third theory. And it's where I put a lot of stock. And I see Shai is giving us the green flag on the paranormal aspect of it, which is my fourth theory. So let's cover the third. Paradoxical undressing due to infrasound. So infrasound, a more scientific but still like debated theory, is that these low frequency sounds below the range of human hearing affected the hikers. Some propose that exposure to infrasound, could have induced panic and disorientation, causing the hikers to undress paradoxically in the extreme cold. So we kind of talked a little bit about it when we covered number stations with their frequencies. Mm-hmm. There are more frequencies well below what people can hear. Think like a dog whistle.
Yeah.
That can alter your brain's reaction to certain stimuli. And the theory suggests that infrasound, in collaboration with something else I'll bring up later called catabaric winds, can make you do wild and crazy things that are totally unnatural, unsafe, and unlike what you would or should do. Oh. So the idea is that they were inside the tent, just exposed to this infrasound at such a frequency that it caused them to just panic. We talk a lot about being like here at the studio that you do the things on the corner of your eyes. They're watching you. Don't look away because they can see you too. Maybe they saw something inside the tent or from inside the tent. And it caused them to just have this reaction that I gotta go. Now, instant fight or flight.
Because especially if they're under the influence of like this infrasound that already sort of, you know, messes with you. And you don't even know that it's there. You don't hear it because it's you can't. And
which then is it starts making you paranoid so yeah.
and weird. And yeah, if you saw like, I mean, a jackrabbit shadow just, you know, running in the thing, and you see that, and you're just, oh my god, what the, and you know, you flip out because, you know, these low frequencies are screwing with you, then yeah.
And it's nuts to think because it could explain why they left the tent. And as Shai so eloquently put, when they came to their senses almost a mile away from their tent, it was already too late.
Oh yeah, you're screwed at that point. Like, there's nothing you can do. I mean, they probably, judging by the way the bodies were laid out, they probably did as much as they could. The two tried to build the fire. It looks like all the other bodies are huddled up together, trying to, like, keep as much body warmth together as they can, and yeah. I mean, I'm assuming there's not, like, an obvious infrasound station anywhere nearby, and there wouldn't be, just because it's a, you know, but is there any like evidence of like infrasound or, oh, it's a natural phenomenon.
Yeah. I was waiting for that. It's natural.
I thought it was like a man-made like a buzzer thing. I don't want to say buzzer, but like there's like a, I don't know, some infrasound device. It's a natural thing that just can happen.
So So infrasound, if I'm not entirely mistaken, is just a sound that is outside the average spectrum of human hearing, much like how infrared is not visible to our naked eyes.
And so, no, I thought it was like a man-made. Oh, that can just happen.
Yeah. The idea is that for the most part, things that you hear that are outside of your spectrum are just, they're just things that you hear and that you just don't even realize it. But this is the phenomenon idea that these actually will affect you if they're done in a certain way, like subtle suggestion or other weird things. In this case, drove them crazy.
Oh, mm-hmm. I hate that.
That's like a dog whistle, you know, you blow a dog whistle and you can't hear it, but they can.
Yeah, but it's like a dog whistle that you blow, like nature blows it, and then you go crazy.
Not mm-hmm. to automatically bring back a reference to anything Warhammer related, but as a quick aside that might be helpful to recontextualize this. Do you remember a particular part in the novel Lion, Son of the Forest in which after knocking at a door, a person behind an individual spoke in a low enough tone where only an enhanced individual could hear?
Oh, yeah! That's so, right! Only an Astartes could hear! Like, that's as only Zabriel could hear the dude.
Right, so that would be the concept, except in this case, it makes you go crazy.
Yeah, oh, I hate that! Yeah. Oh, that a sound you can't even hear and nobody is like maliciously doing it to you and it's that sucks.
The crazy thing about it too. Yeah, the wild thing about infrasound too is it's related to pressure. So if for whatever reason the recipient or the person hearing the sound, like assumably is hearing the sound, is under enough sound pressure, they would be able to hear it. So there's the potential that they were high enough in the mountains where the pressure was, you know, adequate and they could hear these infrasounds to a degree, but the normal person just simply would not, as it's been explained. Only heightened individuals would be able to hear it.
Right. So now I'm wondering, like, is this the only instance of something like this happening in those mountains? Because, like, it seems like up there the conditions are right. Is this the only instance, or have other people felt this there? Like, oh, I hate that.
I'm actually a little surprised this is this concept is struck.
It's completely new to me.
Was the popular comic book hero the Hulk? If I'm not mistaken, was gamma particles, right?
Gamma radiation. Yeah.
Gamma radiation.
That's a comic book. That didn't actually happen.
Right, but it's based on particle radiation that cannot be seen in the visual spectrum, etc.
True. I don't know.
It's a stretch, I know, but.
In September 2009, this is a note, London student Tom Reed died of sudden arrhythmic death syndrome after loud bass music interfered with his heart. Oh. I kind of get that, because, like, you can, like, loud noises, like, you can feel those in your chest, right? So I could actually see that being like a thing. It still sucks hardcore. Like, that is awful, but I could at least see that, because, like, you can feel that, like, when there's a boom of bass, like, you can feel that in your chest. Like, this is just something that is just like, you don't even know why you're acting crazy. You're just
let me go ahead and help you sleep at night. Volcanoes,
great.
Avalanches, earthquakes, and even waterfalls are natural sources of infrasound.
Now, DK, for a long time, I always wondered, what's with this guy? Why is he so weird? And then I realized you did grow up in Hawaii for a bit, didn't you?
A lot of volcanoes
in Hawaii. Maybe you're the way you are from infrasound.
It could be. Pele got me, dude.
I grew up in California, and, you know, earthquakes here, and look how I turned out. Not well.
No, that's true. That infrasound could explain a lot as to why we are the way that we are.
Anyway, it is as Shai puts it, a very good plot for a horror movie, and a pretty good MacGuffin, I'd argue.
A great horror movie synopsis. I wonder, has there been, there must have been horror movies based on the Dyatlov Pass with such a concept, because this sounds like it is a popular theory. So it's like, surely there's been fictionalized retellings of this, right?
So there's a movie that came out in 2013 called The Devil's Pass, but it doesn't cover the infrasound per se. They
It's the devil.
They went more paranormal with
sure,
it.
Sure, sure.
But let's move on to theory number four, alien abduction.
Of course.
Extraterrestrial enthusiasts suggest that the hikers may have been abducted by aliens. Unexplained lights reported in the area and the mysterious circumstances surrounding the incident fuel this theory, even though there is no concrete evidence to support such claims. Now, Shai posted some photos up on the board there so we can take a gander. They had a camera. They took some photos and you can easily say, oh, it's lens flare or it's, you know, environmental damage to the cameras and or photos, because they did recover the film reel and the photo paper from beneath the snow before they were developed. So it's quite possible that, you know, they're just damaged and weathered. However, the cleanest photo, although blurry, shows a set of lights that they otherwise would just not have seen up in the mountains, specifically, you know, where they were.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of theory surrounding, okay, now when we couple that with infrasound, we talk about heightened individuals and we talk about natural phenomena and sounds that just can't be heard by people. It's not too far-fetched to assume that if there was an otherworldly body, could they theoretically be utilizing infrasound to communicate or to be suggestive, as it were?
I mean, sure, but I feel like that might also be a little bit of a MacGuffin, right? Where it's like, oh yeah, it was aliens, and oh yeah, aliens use infrasound to communicate. That being said, though, those pictures are so freaky.
They are.
Those are such creepy pictures. Like, I don't know if it's lens flare. I don't know if it's camera damage. I don't really care. Those are so creepy.
It's really hard to tell, too, because with a lot of the camera footage and this stuff, as back in the 50s, everything was a lot grainier.
True.
And so it's really difficult to nail down that concept, considering how photography and videography was at the time.
Yeah, I think the creepiest ones are that one with the there's all the snowy trees and just the big blotchy blackness in the front, and then the one with like there it I don't know, it looks almost like some freaky mutated bat in the middle. Man, those are so creepy.
The first one almost reminds me of the Iron Lung video game. It looks almost like an anglerfish with teeth coming from below the light.
Yeah,
I can see that. Mm-hmm. But as Shai says here too, some of the photos there are from the same camera, taken at different times, and some of the shapes and the lights and the patterns that you see are repeated. So they're similar enough to say, okay, these were taken at different times in different places, albeit in the same general area. Why are they so similar if this is to be discredited? Like, why is it the way that it is?
Oh, no, don't.
Shai, where'd you get that picture of me?
What is that? Yeah, that's Bricky in a maid uniform, yeah. Is that actually a picture from their camera? That one?
Yes.
Oh my god, I hate that. I don't know. Like, that person or thing, I mean, hey, it could be, you know, Sasquatch, I don't know. But like, they're obviously garbed up in all warm clothing, and I don't love it. Don't love it.
That's the exact argument that a lot of people use when they see that particular photo. They just assume it's, you know, someone's being funny. They took a photo from behind, and it's just someone who's really geared, right? But you'll notice a significant lack of pack on this hiker, which is something that you don't see. And it's taken presumably from behind, as you can see the snow trail is leading away from it, suggesting that they were being followed, at least to a degree. Now, this could have easily just been them having fun with it, but it could also explain their fairly quick ascent to where they inevitably met their demise.
Yeah.
To me, this looks like the hiker propped up a camera, walked away from the camera, and then took a nice photo, because it's very good looking with the trees.
It's very good. Yeah, it really is.
I hope so, because with all this conspiracy talk and all the infrasound and all the acting crazy and all the aliens, it at first glance, I was like, oh my God, that looks so creepy. Also, not that the other pictures didn't show it, but like seeing just how much snow and frost there is and imagining being out in that with like nothing.
Oh, dude, it's terrifying.
Oh my God. Like that is like, I don't know how they managed to make it a mile to make that fire at the cedar tree, like in that. Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
Sheesh. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I've got two more theories.
Okay.
One involves the people that actually live in the area. So the Mansi people, some theories involving the indigenous Mansi people in the region, suggesting that the hikers may have violated sacred grounds or angered local shamans, resulting in a deadly curse being placed upon them. So it's one of the more shamanic type theories, specifically, and this one lays credence to, or the theory actually gains weight because the path that they were meant to take up the Ural Mountain was not where they ended up by any stretch of the imagination. So after they cut from the tent and descended however far, right, a mile or so from their tent, the theory is that they landed on Mansi lands.
Oh. So they were trespassing.
For lack of better terms, yes.
If I'm not mistaken, though, the Mansi people are not particularly hostile or anything.
And they're not. They're not. And the problem that they run into with it, too, and why these theories still exist is because there have been absolutely zero effort to refute that they had any involvement at all.
Wow, really? Wait, they're not like being like, hey, guys, we would never.
They're letting the pieces fall as it may, straight up. They are neither confirming nor denying. They've had a hard time trying to get Mansi folk to discuss what had happened or what was going on during the time period. I think one person came forward, but it wasn't concrete enough to say anything.
Is that just a normal thing for Mansi people to do? Like, they're just not fond of talking to sort of, I don't want to say Western, but more, I don't know. Are they just, is that just their way?
I believe so. Yeah. Oh, okay. I'm led to believe.
They're trying to hide anything. It's just, that's right. Just the way that they are. Okay.
Yeah, I'm led to believe, based off what I've read about their history and everything to that effect, that they simply minimize their interactions with anyone outside their tribe.
Okay. Because I know nothing about them, so I'm just curious.
Yeah, no, that's fine. The last theory is the one that's most rooted in science. That kind of covers the sudden avalanche or airburst phenomena that could happen with where they were. And it's, while it's more grounded than other theories, the idea that a sudden avalanche or an airburst could have happened is entirely up for debate. So we got a note. Oh, we forgot to tell DK. Kolatzikal, the mountain where the Dyatlov group hiked, means don't go there, and mountain of the dead in Mansi language.
Fun, charming, love.
Yeah, it's one of those things too where realistically, if the people who live there don't go there, why?
Yeah, why would you?
Why would you? Exactly. Yeah. So it's one of those things. It's like you can feed it, you'd feed the beast, as it were, or you can leave it as it lay.
Whew. Although were they intending to go that way? Because you said they ended up a little off course, right?
Yes. So
they weren't intending to go to the Don't Go There Mountain of the Dead. They just kind of whoopsied into it.
So they were going to pass through it to some degree. They just didn't intend to end as far into the land as they did.
Okay. Gotcha.
So it was like we were going to take this back road because it was just easier given the weather and the time period. Like, we're hiking the mountains in the dead of winter. What's the easiest way to do it? Well, the easiest way to do it is to just not and wait. But they did it anyway, so they just ended up where they ended up.
Yeah. Normally, when I think about these kinds of like indigenous peoples, when they refer to an area that is always off, or you know, you shouldn't go there, I always kind of assume to myself that it's one of two things. It's either one, horribly treacherous territory and just a bad idea. Mm-hmm. Or
grounded in reality. Yeah.
Right. Or it's something spiritual. Something out there is, you know, it's either sacred or the opposite.
Mm.
And I guess there's the possibility that if it was on the sacred side of things, them either defiling or, you know, elsewhere kind of being disrespectful in that area could push there maybe the anger that could lead to a confrontation. Or secondly, I'm not quite sure how advanced the indigenous people are, but the concept that they could have arrived from the Mountain of the Dead maybe can prove that they see them as like hostile entities entirely.
Yeah, also incredibly true. Yeah, I didn't even think about that initially, because you talked about like the whole sacred grounds and like spiritual aspect to it. My brain immediately allocated the infrasound resource to this discussion. Like, do they avoid it because it's a known area to them to cause panic and just unnatural behavior, and that's why they don't go there?
Did we at all discuss, I mean, I'm trying to remember if we specifically talked on this topic, but the concept of government facilities at the time. So this was the final theory, but I thought I remember when I first listened to this that there were trace amounts of radiation on some of the bodies.
There were, actually.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
I thought I remembered that. Did we discuss that?
Not yet. No, okay. You're not crazy. We did mention it in the beginning that radiation could be involved, but we didn't.
He is crazy,
exactly,
but not about this.
Yeah, that is true.
So radiation, huh?
Yes. So with Yatlov Pass, so this goes back to kind of like the condition of the bodies. Two of those found had way more radiation than you'd expect to find, specifically in this time and place, on their clothing. Right. And some theories kind of suggest like maybe there was trace amounts of radiation in the area that could have led to this, which thus bolsters the theory of military involvement to some degree. But we learned that two of them actually worked in facilities dealing in radiation.
Oh, so it could have just been layover from their day-to-day whatever workings where they had exposure to radiation?
Correct. Okay. But the airburst phenomenon that I discussed in my last theory is kind of where I'm placing my chips for this theory, for the simple fact that an airburst phenomenon typically happens by an external source. So we're talking some form of explosion, typically, that causes the earth, and in this case, the snow, to move in unnatural ways.
Okay.
So with the sudden avalanche theory, we go down to what's called a slab avalanche. Now, this is more science-y than anything else, but it's a type of avalanche that's characterized by the movement of just a mass or slab of snow down a slope. I mentioned before that would experienced hikers will build their tents up against like these shelves to kind of mitigate the wind and the temperature. But what ends up happening in that situation is if you build your shelter against these wind walls or these snowdrifts, the layer underneath can only take so much pressure. And with all of this wind blowing more and more and more mass onto their wall, it can cause what's known as a weak layer deterioration and trigger a slab avalanche. So the weight is just too much and all of it just slides like a sheet over the top. And it's quite possible that while they were inside the tent, one of the hikers inside being experienced heard this happening and immediately sought to escape.
Okay. So he felt this avalanche under them and was like, oh God, we got to get out of here and just like, let's cut our way out of here and dip.
It's a little bizarre that they would cut their way out.
Yeah. At that point, why wouldn't they just leave?
Yeah, just leave.
just open go the out thing, the tent.
Yeah, open the flap.
I mean, I feel like the time it would take for you to specifically take your knife out and start cutting a hole large enough for you to leave would take the same amount of time as opening the flap.
Yeah, that's, mm-hmm. It's still so weird that they cut their way out.
Which I think is another one of those like more government theory situations.
Hmm. Whoa, that's a long note.
Yeah.
Jeez, like, just slide War and Peace over here, why don't you? You're going to bowl me over.
2020 investigation. So it is known that Brignoli and Zolotaryov were better dressed than the rest. One of them, Nikolai, was most likely was on duty that evening, and is Semyon? I can't pronounce his name. Semyon sounds not good. Who had experience in hiking in the Carpathians and in Dubai, probably understood that the slope could be avalanche hazardous and preferred not to undress. Further, situational experts argue that it was Semyon who could hear the characteristic sound of an avalanche starting above the tent and signal the entire company to flee. Hikers cut the canvas and ran down from the avalanche. A similar emergency exit is registered in all textbooks on sports tourism, and the guys acted strictly according to the rules. Oh. The only issue with that is the orderly pattern in which they walked. If you were running from an avalanche, you would be running.
Yeah.
Not having descended.
Casually walking, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. Having descended a mile and a half on the slope to the border of the forest, the hiker stopped under a big cedar and decided to make a fire. They didn't warm up because there was not enough snow to make a hole to hide.
Huh.
So why didn't the hikers go a few tens of meters deeper into the forest is unknown. It could be assumed that they froze so much during the descent that they decided to make a fire here without wasting energy on further movement. And we can refer to the diagrams above where the bodies were found.
Mm-hmm, sure.
And you can sort of see kind of the thought pattern behind this. Doroshenko and Krivonishenko were the first to die. The fire burned out for an hour and a half. By this time, both Yuri spent all their stamina. In extreme cold, they had no strength left to survive. They died of hypothermia.
Oh, what an awful way to go.
The guys took off the clothes from their dead comrades, wrapped themselves in tatters, and decided to return to the tent. And this was the only right decision for survival, but they made it too late. By 3 a.m. in the region, the wind cold index was already negative 50.8 degrees Fahrenheit, and visibility... God. Was no more than 16 meters. Strong blizzard, moonless night. To find a tent under such conditions was akin to a miracle, that which did not happen.
I mean, that all sounds possible. I mean, that all sounds like if you were to look at it from the most logical lens you could possibly look at it from, that would make sense, I guess.
Though it also completely disregards the injuries removed tongue.
Ah, that's true. And the no eyes, no tongue, the fist fight wounds. Yeah. You're right. I don't know how I forgot about the laundry list of injuries.
Yeah.
I think it was, you know, the fist fight wounds we could certainly argue was injuries from falling or you know, things like
sure.
that. But the missing tongue we can only assume.
And the missing eyes. Yeah. What is that?
We can only assume is wildlife, but why just those, you know?
Yeah, I was going to say, if it was wildlife, the whole body would be, like, chewed up, have bite marks on it. Yeah, just the eyes, just the tongue is crazy.
Yeah, you could assume that wildlife might have removed the eyes of, like, some sort of microorganism or bug or something along those lines, did it? But the tongue is just another piece of flesh, and why that and not the rest of the body?
Yeah.
So it's a bit of a bizarre one.
Yeah, that is very bizarre.
Yeah, it's incredibly puzzling, realistically, when you look at it that way, because the official theory suggests a very, like, almost calm, cool, and collected approach to what is otherwise a pretty morbid incident.
Yeah. Just a bad timing avalanche, and you kind of just got screwed, is essentially what the official report on it is. Just, oh, man, of all the times for one of these slab avalanches to happen, oh, that sucks. Now we're in the cold, and we have no chance. So, yeah.
Okay. So I'll read what I've got, and then cover what Shai just threw across the desk.
She is just tossing bricks.
She's on it.
Yeah.
That was me being tossed.
Nice. Very, very, yeah, believable.
The cause of death for most of the hikers was determined to be hypothermia, which is just an exposure to harsh winter conditions led to a fatal drop in body temperature. However, the circumstances, albeit unusual. Several hikers exhibited traumatic injuries, including fractures and skull damage, despite no external signs of a struggle. Notably, the injuries sustained by some of the hikers were described as being similar to those caused by a high-speed car crash. Wow. Soft tissue injuries, specifically on Dubonina, was found with her tongue missing, and other hikers had soft tissue injuries as well. But the absence of external wounds corresponding to these injuries puzzled every investigator and expert. Some reports indicate that the clothing of the hikers contained higher than normal levels of radiation, and that has specifically fueled speculation about potential military involvement or other external factors. But the lack of external wounds, while they all had severe or some had severe internal injuries, there was just a significant absence of external wounds or signs of a struggle on their bodies. So the medical reports note the strange circumstances in which the bodies were found, scattered in different locations, and the peculiar conditions of the campsite specifically, including the torn tent and the hiker's decision to leave without the proper clothing. And it's important to mention that the medical reports, while providing valuable information, have not conclusively explained all aspects of the incident. The mysterious injuries and circumstances surrounding the hiker's death continue to be a subject of speculation. And individual autopsy reports, like the one Shai just gave us, Dubonina was laying on kind of a natural ledge with water rolling over it. Her mouth was open. There are claims that the tongue was ripped or eaten or whatnot. The medical records simply state that the tongue is missing. The medical examiner describes missing hypoglossal muscle as well as muscles on the floor of the mouth. It looks weird, especially given the fact previous bodies had more detailed autopsies. There is no credible explanation for this vague statement. It is noted that the stomach contained about 100 grams of dark brown mucosal mass, usually coagulated blood. It is used by some as an indication that the heart was beating and the blood was flowing when the tongue was removed from the mouth.
Oh.
Cause of death is stated as hemorrhage into the right atrium of the heart, multiple fractured ribs, and internal bleeding. This sort of thing, to sustain the type of injuries that she did, minus the tongue removal, would say that something with substantial weight was either on top of her or throwing her around until it eventually decided, I'm just going to go for the face. And pulled her tongue out, the whole thing, like at its root, the whole thing.
Whoa.
Which There are no bears here, right? Because that immediately makes me think, because I remember bears often will, like, when they find, like, a human, they tend to just kind of throw it around a bit, scratch at it, etc.
Bear would have enough force to rip out a tongue at the root, too, if it got a hold of it.
Right, but it would not like, grab the tongue, you know? It wouldn't, like,
that's true.
Aim for that. It would just probably, I mean, if it scratched the face, like, it would, you just lose an entire face at that point.
That's true. Oof. Whatever it was,
yeesh. So from the radiation perspective, there were four people in the group that had radiation kind of associated with them, like on their clothing, to something to that degree or effect. Kolvatov, Zolotryov, Brignolis, and Dubanina all had radiation on their clothing. 10 specific samples were pulled from the Dyatlov Pass incident, one being the soil. The waistband, so Kolvatov's waistband had radiation on it exceeding 5,600 in terms of centimeter squared. So the contained area ended up being, it's a lot of math. It's a lot of math, a lot of numbers, but to keep it simple, his waistband was radiated. His trousers were radiated. Zolotryov had more radiation on his clothing after being in contact with someone else, speculation. His jacket was contaminated. Brignola's trousers and Dubanina's jacket, they all had exceeding levels of radiation that could not simply be explained by, I work with radiation, especially given that they were so far removed from said place of work and in contact with other people. So radiation dissipates over time, as we have so gloriously covered in a previous broadcast with the core.
The demon core.
So when you look at it from that perspective and you start compiling different theories, specifically in my mind, the infrasound with radiation, and given the area that they were in the time period that they were in, you can assume some form of external involvement, unnatural or natural. You can choose your favorite flavor of conspiracy here.
It's so open-ended.
Yeah, every particular theory is then immediately hit into a brick wall by another issue that goes along with everything happening.
You can
say they were marched out and killed, but you would assume if they were marched out, especially, you know, like, they would be shot, and there's no bullet hole wounds. Why the particular contusions and abrasions? Why the specifically missing pieces? Why cut from the inside of the tent?
Yeah.
Yep. But the thing about it with the radiation, it's on their clothing, yes, and we know it can affect the internals. But without going too much into the weeds with it, there were 25 individual samples of internal tissue organs, specifically, pulled from the four I listed before, the Kolvatov, Zolotryov, Brignolis, and Dubanina, where they were so irradiated, their organs were irradiated, not just their clothing.
Whoa. So that's a lot of radiation.
Yeah,
this is not just like, oh yeah, we happened upon something that was a little irradiated. Or like you said, this isn't like, oh yeah, I accidentally picked this up from work. This is like some big irradiated thing that they came in contact with to get that much.
Yeah, and that's kind of where a lot of the speculation, like, resides, at least with that theory, as far as radiation is concerned. Because having it on your clothing and affecting you is one thing. We've seen the numbers on how much radiation is effectively needed to alter your chemistry. But the fact that the brain of two of the four and their breastbones, their livers, kidneys, their skin, albeit it's what's connected to the clothing there, their stomachs, their livers, everything was irradiated as well on those four specifically.
Well, that's that.
It's a mystery. It's the mystery of the Yetlove Pass.
That, yeah, it seems like every theory is just, I don't know. I like the infra sound though. Well, I shouldn't say I like it. It is the one that unsettles me the most because it's just some natural phenomenon, and then you are just crazy. I don't know why that just that unsettles me.
Yeah, the long-standing question of what really happened on Dead Mountain is
The Don't Go There Mountain.
Don't Go There Mountain. It's perplexing. I've watched documentaries. I've watched videos. I've listened to radio hosts alike. I've engaged in a couple of podcasts. I have medical records. I've got pages upon pages of research on this, and I'm no closer to figuring it out than anybody else.
Well, I was going to say, if it's been a mystery this long,
it's going to stay a mystery. I genuinely feel that.
Yeah, I mean, the only people that know are probably the people that were unfortunately passed away on the Yetlove Pass, and unless we got a time machine,
You know, that was one of the theories that someone posted.
A time machine?
So, time travel, teleportation, or time travel. The idea that, yeah, I'm dead serious. I excluded it because it was like, listen, I'm wild with my theories, but let's be honest. one of the theories that someone genuinely pitched was it's in collaboration with like the alien abduction type thing where they basically slipped through some liminal space, died, and came back. We're just like, where they fell and where they ended, they just zipped back and were just left where they were, plain and simple.
Okay. That sounds like it should be a cult classic B-rated horror movie is what, or a B-rated sci-fi movie.
Kind of. Yeah. I see Shy gave us the chum. So the Mansi tribe in the area also put down these markers, or at least one of them, and it was found 1,000 meters away, 1 kilometer from the location of the deaths of the group, which kind of laid claim to the shamanic curses theory.
Oh.
Right.
It's a marker of sacrifice?
Could be. It very well could be. And we genuinely have no way of knowing because they won't talk to us about it. We just know what we know at surface level.
Well, I don't know. The end. I don't know.
None of them knew. And I don't think we're going to find out today either.
Yeah, it is just, it's one of those things where there's some evidence, but it's all such open-ended evidence too that like almost any theory you can think up kind of sort of works, and it's just perplexing and The infrasound has me the most unsettled. So I am choosing to believe it was infrasound because don't like it. That's my take.
I mean, yeah. the possibility of the thing that caused all this to not even be heard is certainly one of them.
I hate that. Anyway.
Yeah. So I would like to read you the final group diary entry.
Oh, they found a diary?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, great. Lay it on me, Slap.
So this entry was recorded on January 31st, 1959. Okay. Presumably written by Igor Dyatlov, the group's leader.
Is there a timetable of like how soon after this they met their fate?
Speculation.
Okay.
Weather today is a bit worse. Wind from the west, snowing probably from the pines since the sky is perfectly clear. Started relatively early around 10 a.m. Got back on the Mansi Trail. Up to now, we are following a Mansi Trail on which not so long passed a hunter with a deer. So they did see somebody out there.
Okay. They saw a Mansi hunter, right?
Mansi hunter. Yesterday, it seems we stumbled upon his resting stop. Deer didn't go any further. The hunter took the beaten trail by himself. We are following in his steps. Had a surprisingly good overnight. Air is warm and dry, though it's negative 18 C to negative 24 C. Walking is especially hard today. We can't see the trail. Have to grope our way through at times. Can't do more than that. We're also moving about 1 mile per hour. Trying out new ways to clear the path. The first in line drops his backpack, skis forward for 5 minutes, come backs for a 10 to 15 minute break, then catches up with the group. That's one way to keep laying ski tracks nonstop. Hard on the second hiker, though, who has to follow the new trail with full gear on his back. We gradually leave the valley. It's upwards all the way, but goes rather smoothly. Thin birch grove replaces firs. The end of forest is getting closer. Wind is western, warm, piercing, with speed like the draft from airplanes at takeoff. Fern, open spaces. I can't even think of setting up storage here. It's nearly four. Have to start looking for a place to pitch the tent. We go south in the valley. Seems this place has the deepest snow. Wind not strong. Snow about 3 to 4 feet. Imagine such comfort on the ridge with howling wind outside. Hundreds of kilometers away from human settlements. They rested that night.
Oh, that was the end. Oh.
Under the assumption that everything was great.
Yep. Oh, that's, they actually had a photo of them building that tent, huh? Wow, look at those conditions. Jesus.
I was about to say, it almost looks like it's been edited as a aesthetic choice to have the white foreground and background all kind of
yeah.
There. It's really just that snowy.
Jeez, that's crazy. Oh, man. So there was a Mansi hunter that they were following for a while. So there was a Mansi that did indeed see them, and they were following his tracks. So if the Mansi were more open to talking to us, they might have actually been able to give some insight as to what happened. Maybe.
Potentially, yeah. And it's not an uncommon practice either in hiking because of like Sherpas. Like Sherpas exist in other parts of the world. Yeah. My understanding is that they did try to secure some form of Sherpa, but were subsequently denied and chose to go out anyway.
Oh man, bad decision making. Yeah, just like looking at these photos of them and the conditions that they were hiking in, that's insane. Like that is just great. Those are absolutely insane conditions to hike through.
Yeah, and I would never.
Yeah, like I can. You know, with conditions like that, I can see how your mind would start playing tricks on you, too. Because it is just, it's a whiteout. It's just a whiteout. Completely. Like, I might just go crazy from walking in that, let alone any other sort of, you know, whatever.
Clearly, they were experienced hikers to even make the
attempt,
attempt this kind of thing. But it does make you wonder if... You know, like their experience clearly speaks to the possibility that the nature and the wilderness is less at fault because of how good they were.
Yeah.
And yeah, basically these photos, they're clearly, despite the temperatures, goofing
they're
off
a good time. Yeah.
Enjoying themselves.
Oh man. That picture makes it so much, like, because, like, before this was like, oh yeah, it's you know, it's awful that they passed, but you're thinking so much about the theories and, oh, why is this missing? But like that picture of all of them just like goofing off, smiling, having a good time makes it feel so much more like tragic, and it hits so much closer to home that, like, you know, like these were people. It's not just a mystery. These are like real people that were just, you know, doing what they love. And man, that sucks.
Yep. that's the unfortunate gravity of it.
Yeah.
You can see from that photo too. It's a sort of an overlay of the map on where they were and where they were found. The black dotted line was their intended path. And you can see
where they diverted. Oh,
yes.
Yeah, they got really off course, didn't they?
Yeah. Yeah. Considering that cedar tree is almost a mile away.
Wow.
From their tent, you can effectively see where they veered very far off course there.
Oh, yeah. And this is an experienced group, too, so conditions must have been just... Sheesh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that sucks. That, I don't think there's any other way to put it, no matter what happened. That is just... Ugh.
One of the theories involving, like, the hand-to-hand injuries actually stems from... another theory, which does have good weight to it, I would say. I think it was Dyatlov himself. He had a wood stove that he would bring with him on these excursions. And one of the theories is that the wood stove got too hot and started smoking inside the tent.
Oh, and that's why they had to cut their way out. Well, and that's, again, you could still just open the flap.
You could. The theory was that it spit embers and was effectively starting some form of fire or, you know, smoke inhalation, panic, let's cut this open.
Oh, yeah.
Hence, the physical injuries after the fact looking like someone got their ass beat because, yeah, well, why would you turn this on? Why would you do that? You can totally see in the panic and stress of the situation, like, why you would do that.
Yeah.
But...
Find evidence of that, wouldn't you?
You would. I think they found the stove, but I'm not entirely sure what they found in the way of, like, burns or damage.
Right. Well.
Well is a great phrase.
Yeah. Well.
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 That
that blows.
That yeah,
it does.
That blows at about -50.
Yeah, it certainly like it sucks. Like seeing the pictures of them looking so happy and like nothing is wrong is easily to me the worst part. Like knowing everything that ends up happening and then just seeing like the pictures of them smiling and posing for pictures and it's just like.
They were having so much fun.
They like, were. They were doing what they love. They were having a good time. And just to know how it ends is just like, oh, that's depressing. My day is ruined.
Yeah, it was fun till it wasn't.
Yeah, that is definitely one way to put it, for sure. How you feeling, Bricky?
You know, not a great thing. One of the enjoyable parts about a mystery like this is that it's true mystery. A combination of too many factors that don't make sense, mixed with time period, kind of not having the greatest documentation, mixed with weather even reducing that documentation even more.
Yep.
It's a true mystery. The only real mystery that you can, I think, identify as feasible is the government conspiracy. The only way you can generally have any kind of like, oh, it was so weird because it was meant to be weird.
Yeah.
That generally is the only explanation that I like. It's the closest one I can think of while simultaneously it's so it's not even close.
Yeah, it's the closest you can get, and even that isn't close. And it's just,
it's the only one that can explain
everything. Yeah,
but even then, that's just kind of
a far reach, because that's the only thing that could potentially, and even that is just like probably not. And it's just,
you can argue, I guess, that extraterrestrial could also explain all of it, but it's a bit more of a farther stretch. And we've discussed before, the Soviet Union were not the shining examples of morality either. So it's a little bit easier to think of it that way.
Yeah, yeah. Intergalactic planetary. Anyway. Okay.
That's a Boomer reference. I didn't get that one.
Oh, no. Really?
the Beastie Boys?
Thank you, Slab!
Oh, it was the Beastie Boys. Never mind. I rescind my statement.
Beastie Boys is a little... I guess they're kind of Boomer now.
It's like late millennial.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Also, I'm the youngest one here, so, you know.
Yeah, but you're still... Whatever, dude.
Whatever.
Whatever, dude.
It's like your opinion, man.
That's like, it's like
ironically, that is arguably more of a Boomer reference.
Yeah, that's more the dude, the Big Beastie Lebowski Boys. Is more of a Boomer reference. Who's the youngest one? All right, anyway. Slap, great job today. Like, oh my
Very
god,
good.
That was...
Thank you for inviting me into the studio.
No, now, it's my pleasure. Damn, it's like that.
Get out!
I don't have a door shutting sound effect. It would have been nice to have.
Yeah, our soundboards aren't exactly up to date here in the studio.
No, not really.
I feel like I could like grab all of the levers on the board and be like, wow, wow.
Oh, yeah. It's great. I'm sure Shai would love that if you mess with all of her equipment that's already a little dated. Yeah.
She's pulling the gun out again. I think I should leave. Great. Great to be here. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, Slap.
Super high tech.
Yeah, super high super tech. High super tech, high tech. Dude. We don't even have AC. We just got a little rotary fan over there. Well, it's a tall one, but still. All right, Slap. You want to let the listeners know?
Sure, man. I'm here. So, thank you all for joining us on this journey into the unknown. If you have your own theories or additional information, I would love to hear about them. I've been Slap. That's been DK. We have our special guest, Bricky. Again, Bricky, thank you for joining us in your super busy schedule.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
We've had Shai. So, till then.
We've had Shai.
Yep. We've had Shai. Till then.
Past tense.
Keep one eye open, folks. You've been listening to the Unidentified Signal on 99.9. And remember, sleep where they can't find you.